Today is the 20-year anniversary of 9/11, so we decided to make this bonus episode of the podcast to commemorate that. I wanted to issue a content warning for this episode because we deal with some heavy topics. So, of course, we talk about the terrorist attacks that happened on 9/11, which are horrific and violent and involve so much loss of life. My guest is Obed Lammy, and we also talk about his new film, which is a documentary about racial violence and lynching. So this is a pretty heavy episode. I wanted you to be warned before you listen. That said, Obed shares some fascinating thoughts, so I'm excited for you to hear it if you're up for it. All right, on to the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and today we're bringing you a bonus episode. This episode is releasing on September 11th, 2021, which is the 20-year anniversary of 9/11. There are a number of new documentaries about 9/11 out recently, so I decided to have a documentarian on the show to talk about one of them. The film is 9/11 Inside the President's War Room, which takes a close look at President George W. Bush and his staff during the 24 hours of September 11th, 2001. It is streaming now on Apple TV+. More about that in a few minutes. My guest is a wonderful filmmaker named Obed Lammy, a documentarian who is very interested in 9/11 and American history in general, and he has some fascinating insights to share in today's conversation. Interestingly, Obed was born and grew up in Haiti, which gives him a really unique perspective on American culture and politics. Obed came on the show previously to discuss the documentary Boy State, and at that time he told us about his documentary short film, A Promising Voice. Well, that film ended up winning Filmland 2020 and earning him some acclaim, and today we're going to talk about his new film. It's called Once Forgotten, and it tells the true story of some enslaved men in 1800s Arkansas who died by lynching. The film is incredibly moving and very well made, and I'm so thrilled to welcome Obed back to the show today. Obed Lammy, welcome back to Art House Garage. How are you today?
Hey, Andrew, thank you for having me again. It was yesterday we had our first episode, and here I am back again.
Yes.
So thank you for having me.
Time flies. Well, I'm so excited to have you because I just saw that you post on Instagram you had a new film coming, and I was like, I immediately messaged you, like, ooh, I want to watch that. Can I see it? And can we talk about it on the podcast? And so I'm so glad we did. Your film is Once Forgotten, and we'll talk about that in just a second. We're also going to talk about this 9/11 documentary, and we kind of talked about, you know, what should we discuss on the podcast outside of your film, and found out you are very interested in 9/11, and you've been watching lots of things about it. So I'm excited to hear your take on the film we decided to discuss.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about your film. So Once Forgotten, it tells a story of three enslaved men who were lynched here in Arkansas, in Northwest Arkansas, in Washington County. And you have a number of experts kind of on this, and the people you interview in this film are really wonderful and have so many insights about the story and kind of digging into the truth of what really happened, because as we get into the film, we hear, like, the story that has been out there maybe is not the truth. And you also just interview these people about kind of what lynching, the place it has in history and kind of what it represents. And it's really, really fascinating to hear. So I'm curious, how did you first become aware of the story of Anthony, Randall, and Aaron, who were these three enslaved men who were lynched?
Okay, so interestingly, I was called to work on that project from two of my professors. So they have been in contact with the Washington County Remembrance Project. So this is a local organization here in Fayetteville or in Washington County, mm-hmm. that has been working on stories about lynching here in Washington County. So they have done extensive work on researching the story of these three men. So they, I guess, started to work on that project maybe in 2017 or 18. Mm-hmm. So I remember when I was on that Zoom meeting with my professor, and they were like, yes, Obed, we have a project for you. And what is it? So lynching. And I could barely understood what they were talking about, because everything was so confusing for me. But I knew I wanted to give it a shot. Mm. I'm very interested in these kind of stories, you know, trying to know a little bit about the community, trying to dig deep into history. So, so that's basically my introduction to that project. So, and later on, I had to meet with all the people who are involved in that organization. And also because it was during COVID, that was a little bit challenging because, you know, everything had to go through an email and also Zoom. But over time, and with the support of, you know, the community, the people involved with the Remembrance Project, and also my professor and other people at the university, the process has been a little bit feasible, not necessarily easy. So yes, that's basically my introduction to that story.
How long did it take you to gather all the footage you needed, and how long did it take you to edit it?
I started to work on that project maybe late August or beginning of September 2019 last year.
Okay.
It was supposed to be a very short term project, like something we should have completed in by December 2020. Sorry. Oh, so okay, I started in August, late August 2020. So it was supposed to be a short term project, something we should have completed in maybe by December 2020. Mm-hmm. But actually, because I am an overthinker, and also I was trying to get it right, it took me personally quite some time to really understand the story, what, you know, specifically are at stake. And also because there are so many stories or film or documentaries about lynching out there, my challenge was, how do I tell a story about lynching, but from a different perspective? Mm-hmm. So it took me quite some time to figure out, what is the story? How do I tell that story? And also visually, because we are talking about three men and we have any imagery about them. Mm-hmm. So how do we tell that story? How do we make sure they are the center of the story, even if we have, you know, any archive? Mm-hmm. To show who they are. So along the way, I had to think about, you know, different plan. You know, at first we were thinking about having animation, and I was like, well, that might be a little bit too lazy, because if I have animation, that means I don't do the work it takes to, you know, tell that story and center the story around them while we don't see them. Mm-hmm. And another challenge also was, you know, how, because the film was going to be made up, and in fact is made up with a lot of talking head interviews. This is not necessarily my favorite style of filmmaking, but I had to rely on that, because this is, you know, historical documentary. You have to interview expert and witnesses and people who are close to the story. But I was also thinking very hard to see how I can still go that way, but try to avoid the documentary to be boring or to be, you know, a lecture. So and now to gather the footage, it took me a year actually, but I had to pause, because sometimes I've been lost. I don't know where I am going with that story. Mm. I've been filming all the places, I've been shooting interview, I've been, you know, gathering some archive, and I am lost. I don't know where I am going with that story. But my professor, Colleen Thurston, she's been very helpful. She has helped me to, you know, center and to structure the story. So one thing that was clear
in my mind, from the go, was that I need to make it a story about Northwest Arkansas. So I can help the viewer to see these, you know, region differently, because there is an assumption that, which might be true actually, Northwest Arkansas is very diverse today. You know, Fayetteville, we have, actually there is someone in the film who talks about that. Fayetteville, we have the university, we have many big companies in Northwest Arkansas, and we have people from all over the world. But there is this backstory. There is this backstory of that place that we need to know about. So that's why you would see at the beginning of the film, I try to showcase some, you know, imagery about Northwest Arkansas, so I can get people into that place as we see it today. And then we take a step back to talk about the story of the three men. And also one of the thing I did at the very last, not last minute maybe, is to incorporate archival imagery about, you know, Black history in America, because we also wanted to, you know, tell the story of these three men, but also put it in a bigger context of lynching in America, or also how do we tell story in America? What kind of story we tell? Who is telling the stories, and how should we, how should we understand history? So to me, it's a story about story.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, that definitely comes through. And so you mentioned there's a lot of talking heads, and that's true. They are all saying really fascinating things. So I think that like they never got too slow or anything, for me at least, because all the people you're interviewing are really fascinating. You have Roanne Elliott, who is the program director of the Washington County Community Remembrance Project that you mentioned, and she does a lot of wonderful things to kind of connect it to modern day and say, why does this history matter? And you're right, like Northwest Arkansas is seen as sort of the progressive part of the state. And yet here we have, you know, a dark racial history, just like a lot of other places in the state. You also, I think it's Dr. Carrie Banton, who she talks about like kind of what you're saying about, you know, who's telling the stories. And so the stories that we have recorded are largely by the white people involved and actually the family member of the accuser, and essentially in this story. And she has the quote about, you know, the, until the lions are the historians.
Yeah, exactly.
The history will always favor the hunter.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I'm very glad you bring that, because one of the things that has made the filmmaking process, you know, easier, at least for me, is having the chance to interview all these brilliant people. They are very smart. They are on point. And I can make a film with each of these interviews. Maybe some, at times it was a little bit complicated for me to, you know, get some quotes, because I did want to make a short film. But, you know, whether it's Dr. Robinson, the new interim chancellor at the University of Arkansas, talking about lynching, talking about why there might be a little bit of difference between, you know, what the stories Black people are talking about and, you know, what white people have been told, which most of the time is considered as official history in America. He's talking about that, you know, it has to do with slavery and the fact that Black people there in many states, they were not allowed to learn how to read and write. That was a very interesting insight about why we are here today. And, you know, also Sharon Killian, she's the one who brings the Black version of that story. Because I have to say that the story has been, as you did say it also, the story has been around also for quite some time. But what this film is doing is to reframe the story by bringing forward the Black version of the events that led to the lynching of the three men. So, and that was a little bit challenging for me also, because
many times I had to ask myself which story I am telling in that film, because the family member of one of the interviewee who is a member of the family who accused the man, she has extensive knowledge about what happened. We had a very long interview, and she's so gracious and so she has been so helpful to me during the process. And I had to many times, you know, try to recenter the story, because that, for example, has to do with who is talking first, for example, in the field. Mm-hmm. Which version of the story is needs to be first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit challenging, but again, I'm very glad that I have been able to work with very smart people. They have all contributed to make the process a little bit feasible for me.
Yeah, and I want to touch on what you were just saying. So it's Margaret Holcomb. She's a distant relative of the white slave owner who died, and they were accused of killing him, and that's retaliation from that has led to their lynching. So she, you know, yeah, local historian, and it's so fascinating that she's involved in all of this and is at the memorial and everything at the end of the film. But I love what Miss Elliott says at one point. That you know, she talks about being proud of her heritage, this is Miss Elliott, who's the director of the Remembrance Project, and you know, her descendants were slaves and have, you know, come through such incredible hardship. And then at a different point in the film, she poses the question, like, I wonder what white people think when they hear these kind of stories, like, what were my ancestors doing at mm-hmm. this time? Like, and I that for me as a white viewer, really that stood out to me in the film. And you know, there's yeah, I don't know exactly what to say about that, other than that was a really fascinating point.
That was a very powerful quote, and that brings, you know, the story, that helps the story to be very relevant to what's happening in the country right now, the conversation we have about race, about racism, and about diversity, things like that. That was very powerful. And you know, at some point when you see her or when you hear her saying things like that, it forces you to pause a little bit about what we've heard before, the story of the three men, and then to, you know, think a little bit, because we might have, you know, people nowadays saying, well, yes, I'm a white person, but I didn't enslave anyone. That's right. What ancestor did. That's not my fault. We've heard that, you know, on social media, but it doesn't mean you are guilty for what your great-great-grandparents did, but somehow you should confront yourself about what you are doing now. Mm-hmm. This is a very important point. Yes, that wasn't me. It's not my fault. My great-grandparents did that. But what are you doing now? And, you know, Sharon Killian, in the same line, brings the story more to the present reality when she, you know, went on mentioning some of the instances of maybe racial violence in this country, talking about the case of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. So, you know, all of these quotes or messaging, they correlate to each other, and altogether they make the story, I guess, powerful and also very relevant.
Yeah, it is an incredibly powerful story, and it's relevant, as you're saying. I think that's exactly right. I'm so glad that I've seen it. What's next for the film? Are you putting it in festivals, that kind of thing?
Oh yeah, thank you for watching it, and I know you you love films, and having people like you to watch my film is it means a lot to me, and having all your feedback too, and talking about the film in your podcast. And I guess this is my first maybe public conversation about that film. I've
Oh,
talked to
wow.
people. Well, actually, I have to say the film also is my or was my thesis project for my master's program. Yes, we have submitted the film in a number of film festivals. We are waiting for, decision from the festival organizers, and we are also planning some public screening here in Fayetteville in different parts of the state. We are
Right.
trying to reach out to public library, local communities, and trying to share the story to as many people as possible, because you make a film for people to watch. And one thing I have learned, during my program at the university is it's not enough to make a film. There is a lot of work to be done to share the film and make sure that people watch the film and spark conversation. And with documentaries like this, you really need to make sure people watch it and, maybe spark conversation. And I don't know if that's gonna change people's life or people's perspective, but at least I feel like anyone who watches this film can learn something.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's true, and especially for people here in Arkansas who, this is in their backyard, So yeah, I think it's really interesting, and I'm so thankful that that we have this film. I hope a lot of people get to see it.
Thank you very much.
Well, all right, from there, let's move on to another documentary, one that you did not make, but we are going to talk about the new film 9/11 Inside the President's War Room.
Good morning. Hi. How are you?
It was absolutely spectacular weather. Not humid. Skies were clearer.
Smoke is billowing out of the building.
ABC Network News. A plane apparently has crashed into the World Trade Center in New York.
We went from a calm, beautiful day to one in which our world changed dramatically.
September 11th, 2001 was the worst terrorist attack in U.S. history. Now, experience the first 12 hours surrounding the events in a way the world has never seen.
Andy Carr comes up behind me and says, America's under attack. And I'm watching a child read.
We needed to move the president and get him out of there. He could be a sitting duck.
There was a call that said, Angels next. Angel was the code word for Air Force One.
We worried someone in the president's circle could try to take down Air Force One.
Every plane had become a missile.
One of the targets might well be the White House.
All aircraft land as soon as possible.
Mother got on the phone. She said, we're outside Milwaukee. I said, you gotta be kidding me. What are you doing there? She said, you grounded our plane.
In their own words,
she told me her plane had been hijacked and the line went dead.
That really hit home.
Those at the heart of power on that unforgettable day.
We did everything we knew to do. But 3,000 people died on your watch. It just gnaws at you.
Come together to reveal what happened behind closed doors.
She took the badge from her son's dead body, gave it to the president, and said, I want you to always remember.
I remember the Secret Service screaming, take off your heels and run.
We've never had a crisis quite like this.
Of course, we all were hurting. We all were terrified.
The first plane was an accident, the second one was an attack, and the third one was a declaration of war.
All right, let's talk about 9/11 Inside the President's War Room. So this is a new documentary on Apple TV Plus that, there's a kind of a handful of a new documentary and film projects coming out around 9/11 because it's the 20-year anniversary. And this is one that caught my eye because it has a little bit of a unique angle. It's following just the president and his staff and kind of the decision makers that day and what their experience was like. So we get some of that outside context, but it mostly relies on you to know kind of here's what happened that day. And now you can see, you know, what was George W. Bush doing? What was Condoleezza Rice doing? What was Dick Cheney doing? And it's pretty interesting. So I'm really curious to hear what you think about it. But first, I thought we'd talk a little bit just about 9/11 itself. So I'm curious, Obed, how old were you on 9/11 of 2001? And were you aware of what was going on that day?
Yes, I was 9 years old and I was in elementary school, of course, but I can't recall any memory of that day. I guess because I grew up in a small town, we didn't necessarily have access to international news organization as far as TV or newspaper. But growing up, the word or the phrase World Trade Center or the name World Trade Center was a thing, you know, in our conversation. I didn't know exactly what happened, but I guess from because we have a lot of people in the United States and specifically in New York, there's a big Haitian community there. I guess with circulation, Haitian people going back and forth to the United States, they, and also people having access to information, they knew about that, and you know, they have, you know, shared small stories, and that's why maybe the name World Trade Center was in our conversation. But me personally, I didn't have any memory of that day. But I can tell you, when I was maybe 19, 20, 21, I had a chance to go to it maybe for the first time. I had a chance to go to watch a movie in a public theater. And the movie was about World Trade Center. It was a very moving experience for me because to see the event, to see the actions, to see the big buildings collapsing and the people trying to rescue the victims, that was very, very moving. And I guess those images sit in my mind for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And when my first year here in the United States in 2019, I came in Arkansas in March 2019. And before I started my master program in the summer 2019, I had a chance to go to New York. And one of the things I did was to visit the 9/11 memorial. That was, again, a very, very moving experience. And this is really the first time I was very aware of the scope and the magnitude of the event, because I at that museum or that memorial, there is so much you can see to learn about what happened exactly. It was a very moving experience, and that is still shocking to me. And now, during, you know, over the past few weeks, I have watched so many documentaries and some programs on TV, on CNN, for example, about that day. I feel like there is so much to learn in each story, each news article, each documentary. It brings a different perspective and helps you understand what really happened a little bit better.
Yeah, well, so that's amazing. So your first movie theater movie was about the World Trade Center. Was it the Oliver Stone film, World Trade Center? Is it? Do you know?
Exactly.
With Nicolas Cage in it? Yeah. I've not seen that.
That's it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's it.
I remember that day. So I was 11 years old. I was in the sixth grade. I was living in Mobile, Alabama at the time. And you know, started out as a regular day, went to school and everything. And then at some point early in the day, they kind of stopped everything, and they pulled out TVs and we watched the news all day. And I just remember being really confused at first. And it was really scary. I didn't realize quite how big of a deal it was at first. And then as the day went on and like more things were happening, it was pretty frightening. You know, I was a kid and I didn't know what was going on. Yeah. So it's really fascinating here 20 years later to see, you know, the impact that this horrific event had on our country, on the world. And it's fascinating to hear your perspective, someone from Haiti. And so I'm also curious. Go ahead.
Did you were in Alabama at that time, and you know, the events happened in New York. Was the country in like lockdown mode, or like did you go back to normal life the following day? What did it look like?
Good question. Yeah, I think next day we went pretty much back to normal. I remember at the point that they said that all the airplanes were grounded, like there's no more air travel, and that was probably the thing that it didn't affect my day that much, you know, in small town, or actually in Mobile, Alabama. I didn't have to, you know, go into a bunker or anything like that. But whenever the air traffic was stopped, like I think my grandparents were about to travel or were planning to travel that day, and their plane was canceled because of it. I remember talking with friends about it and just watching the news pretty much all day in our classrooms. And I remember too, like going home and like not knowing what to do. Like, should I just like watch TV like I normally do? That feels weird. And so I just remember being kind of out of sorts because of it. And then watching the president address the nation that evening. But I guess life pretty much went back to normal as far as like going to work, going to school the next day. But it was, you know, in the news for so long. And the war that began, that was obviously affecting the whole country and everything. But yeah, it's interesting.
I can imagine.
Well, I'm curious. So you are a documentarian. As a documentarian, what do you think about this documentary? So it follows kind of the decision makers, as I said. And so that's a little bit of a different take on the material. So what do you think? Do you think this film is well put together?
Oh, yes, it is very captivating to me because, you know, as I said before, I've been watching a lot of, you know, documentaries or news program about 9/11. But one thing I was looking for was some insight from George Bush, because he was the man of the moment. So the main things I've watched before, they were talking about George Bush. There's a very fascinating program from that I watched on CNN that interviewed the students and the professor at the classroom that George Bush was visiting during that day. But this documentary is very interesting, again, because you get to hear from the decision makers. But what was very interesting is that you get to hear from them from a place of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, they talk about fear, about anger, about hesitation. And to me, it's interesting because most of the time, you know, from my Haitian perspective, he's not an American, sometimes you get to think of the United States as the most powerful country, as a country that has a solution for everything. But now hearing these people, Condoleezza Rice and the vice president, the president, talking about how they didn't have option, they didn't have access to information, for example. Mm-hmm. They had confusion about what was going on, about information they received. For example, one thing that was that made me not smile necessarily, but I was like, is when there was information from, I guess, FBI, intelligence from FBI saying that the angel, was a target. And that put, you know, the whole coup and the people, the president, in panic mode. Mm-hmm. Yet later on, they learned that that wasn't true. Mm-hmm. That was a miscommunication. So, you know, I guess this documentary helps you understand how these leaders, they are also human beings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some days, or in situations like this, they don't have solutions also. And I guess the whole country that they was waiting on the president to say something, to do something. And he was also one of the most maybe vulnerable people during that day. So it's really interesting. Because I am from a journalistic background, When I watch documentaries interviewing, you know, politicians or people who have power, I sometimes expect questions that, you know, challenge them.
Right, yeah.
But now, being a filmmaker, I understand your role as a filmmaker sometimes is just to let people share their story, their perspective. But otherwise, I think maybe it can be easy just to let, you know, the president, all these powerful people, you know, explain or share how they feel, why they, what they did, without challenging them, because of course you have Condoleezza Rice, for example. She, you know, had a little bit of confession saying that they should have done more, but I don't necessarily see the president in a place of, you know, confession.
Yeah.
What he did wrong. Another thing I can also bring from maybe a filmmaking perspective, one thing I would have done differently in that film in terms of maybe artistic approach, I would have shot George Bush interview center frame. He was like any other person in that film. If you don't know who is George Bush, if you don't know George Bush is the president of the United States, if you don't know his face, if you didn't read, you know, the lower third, you would not know he's, you know, the main character of the film. He is actually the main character of the film.
Yeah.
But I think I would have had him center frame, and also I would have, you know, pressed George Bush a little bit more to get something, you know, something more of, you know, yeah, what should have you done differently?
Right.
But again, I guess this is a very great work, the fact that they get the president to sit down and talk about that, even in, you know, have all these people who are around him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with all the things you're saying. I really like, for me, I think what's most interesting about this is it is almost like a psychological study of George W. Bush in a way. Like, you're right, he's very much the main character, and it's fascinating to like see, you know, what he was doing that day and then hear from him, his perspective on it now. And yeah, it's really interesting. And it's like he kept wanting to just go back to Washington, D.C. We have to get back. We have to get back. I didn't realize like how many different places they went.
Exactly. That was very, very fascinating.
Yeah, like all these Air Force bases and his staff having to push back and saying like, we can't go back. It's not safe. And eventually the Secret Service having to pull rank and saying like, we're not going back. It's not safe. And like, I thought that was so interesting. Like, I think it was the Secret Service. One of the Secret Service people being interviewed today said, you know, Air Force One serves at the pleasure of the Secret Service, not the president. So like, we're not flying this plane back to where you want to go. And like seeing the ego involved in that too, some like they became heated at a few points, it seemed like. But yeah, I also like what you're talking about. The probably my favorite moment in the film is near the end there, where it has Condoleezza Rice and she's really reckoning with, you know, what could we have done differently. And it doesn't seem like these interviewers like gave a lot of really pointed questions, like you're saying, but it juxtaposes. So Condoleezza Rice says, you know, by definition, we failed. Like this huge of a loss of life, we failed.
I would have loved to hear that from George Bush instead of.
Yeah. Right. So that's what's so interesting is it cuts directly from that to him. And he's saying,
I feel like they gave George Reeves a lot of softball questions.
You're probably right. Yeah.
Again, one thing also you can learn from that documentary, or at least I have learned, is that the system is very fragile. Or maybe, you know, it's, you know, 10 years since that, you know, happened. I guess they have, you know, made a lot of changes, you know, within the White House, the bunker, and you know, the security system of the president. But, you know, it forced me to ask the question, how much of the power the president of the United States have? Because I understand he was trapped in his trip to that school, and he was very far from Washington, but he could not make too much decision also. But for example, the Air Force One, they had to take the president to places they wanted to, right? The president could not communicate with the vice president because, you know, issue of technology and communication. It was maybe, we can sum up this film to say that this was the day that the president of the United States had less power.
Yeah, and you really get that sense of like helplessness. So like they're learning stuff on the news right alongside the whole country. Like they don't have intelligence ahead of time. And yeah, like you mentioned that bunker at the White House that I think it's at the White House where Dick Cheney was, and how the technology is so antiquated and like they run out of oxygen at one point, like exactly. So many things, like, and they can't get a secure line to the airplane at different times. And it's just amazing. And so like thinking about how much has changed just in the world since then is pretty amazing. But then even just things like the technology and the security, I mean, security at airports, that's like something that affected everyone going forward. And now it's so much stronger than it was before. But yeah, so many things that you don't think about that have changed since then. But yeah, you're right. He's at that moment at the end where it has Condoleezza Rice saying that about, you know, of course we failed in a big way that this happened at all. And then it cuts directly to him saying, what could we have done differently? Like, of course, basically like he doesn't have any regrets about that, which is just fascinating to hear. And like, I don't know how I feel about that, but yeah, go ahead.
I feel like Condoleezza Rice has personally done a very good job to be transparent in that interview for the film. And there are also other interviewee or characters in the film. They have, you know, they give some very personal and emotional insights of that moment. I really love the fact that, you know, although I'm not very okay with, you know, the fact that they didn't press George Bush too much, but they really show you the human face of these leaders. Yeah. Because again, so many times when we see them on TV, when we see them, you know, in the media or at the White House or, you know, official event, we think of them as people who have superpower, who have solutions for everything. But they were figuring things out also, like every American people were doing during that day. And also understanding some, the film also gives you the chance to understand some, you know, little stories that, you know, took place during that day. For example, there is a lady, she's called Barbara, she was killed in the flight that landed in Pennsylvania. She was a close friend of the president. And that moment, the president had to deal with this national crisis. And also, that was a personal moment for him. Another thing that I felt like was brilliant in that film is when the president talked about the phone call he had in Air Force One with her mom.
Yeah.
That is something you don't get to see or you don't get to hear about every day when it's come to, you know, political leaders like George Bush. And in moment of crisis.
Yeah.
I think that was really good.
I really like that moment too. She says something like he says, "Where are you?" And they say, "We're in Milwaukee." And he's like, "Why are you in Milwaukee?" And he's like, "Because you grounded our plane. Like, we didn't want to be here because of what you did. It's kind of a funny.
That was a really random conversation with the mom and the son, and it really takes you, you know, back to the reality that these people, they are human beings. But it's sad that, you know, we had to learn these, you know, or know about this aspect of the life in a very sad moment, like 9/11, but yes, I think they do a very good job in terms of, you know, getting the insights of the decision makers during the day, and also this human aspect of what was going on in their mind, what was going on, what was their feeling, having, for example, some tension between the president and the vice president, between Condoleezza Rice and the president, between the president chief of staff and the president. They had to, you know, sometimes calm down the president. The president was angry. He was forced to, you know, stay in position. He didn't want to be. That was a very interesting documentary.
Yeah, and I like those human moments are probably some of the most standout for me as well. So like we see Karl Rove crying at one point talking about the day, and we see I can't remember her name, but she's like head of the Situation Room, and she was on the plane with him, and like I didn't realize how many threats they felt to their personal safety. So they're like, you mentioned, there was the feeling or like the miscommunication that someone on board Air Force One could have been involved in the attack, which is so interesting. And they found out that's misinformation. But then later, some piece of intelligence suggested that this could have just been wave one of two, and maybe they shouldn't go back. There's still more attacks to come or something. But that woman... Go ahead.
Well, that was a very tense moment for me when I was watching the film, when they were talking about the fact that they thought one of the person in Air Force One could be a threat. Mm-hmm. I was like, why are they about to kill one person? Because, you know, there is so much at stake. The life of the president is at stake. So what would be the decision to take in the situation? That was very, very unbelievable for me. Like to be in Air Force One with the president and to think that anybody could be a threat. So that was a moment, that was a day of big panic for America. And many people, besides, you know, the victims and the people who were very involved in that attack, but I guess the rest of the country knew very little about what was going on exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really fascinating. I'm so glad I've watched this. I think, you know, I was wanting to engage with, you know, the history of this since it is the 20th anniversary in some way. And I think this is a good way to do it. And there are several, as you mentioned, several new things coming out. There's Netflix series and some 5-6 hour documentary series out. This one is just 90 minutes. And I think it provides a kind of unique perspective. So I'm so glad that I've watched this. Do you have any final thoughts on the film before we wrap up?
So yes, I think I was very much looking forward to, you know, watch something about specifically George Bush. And when you suggested that we watch that film, I had no clue that was going to be the perspective. And I'm so glad that I got to watch it and, you know, to learn from these people and, you know, learn specifically from someone like Condoleezza Rice. I mean, she was powerful. She was very, very powerful. And I think she's still in a very good position in the political landscape today. She's very respected in the Republican Party. And I guess she was one of the first person of color or black person to be in that position, Secretary of State, in the history of the country, right?
I think that's correct, but I don't know my history well enough, but I think that's right.
That might be correct, but she was in a very, very powerful position during that day. And, you know, you also see she had a phone call with Vladimir Putin. Not George Bush. She was on the phone with Vladimir Putin, and she had to be very strong to say, Mr. President, we are going to... What was it about?
Escalate their something about their Air Force.
Exactly. She urged Vladimir Putin to, you know, to step back because you know, US Army is going to do something. That was very powerful. So yes, I love historical documentary and I love politics. I guess this documentary gave me a chance to enjoy those two area of interest, politics and history. So yeah, I'm so glad I watched it. I will keep watching more stuff about 9/11 over the weekend, maybe over the course of the rest of the year, and you know, to learn more about, you know, history. And also it's always inspiring to me whenever I watch a documentary. I always try to pick something, whether it's the way they shoot an interview, or we should talk about that. The interview, like, they were beautifully shot.
Yeah,
I love the fact that they use a little bit of black. The background was not very well lit because the focus was more on the character's face. That was brilliant. I loved it. So they didn't have the same background for everybody, but it wasn't distractive. So when you switch from one character to another one, and they use archive, not too much, but it was well balanced. One thing also I love is the voiceover. Personally, I don't like any documentary about voiceover because I feel like they tell you what to see. I feel like you should let the viewers to see what they want to see. But this is one of the few times for me, voiceover was they make a very good use of voiceover because they use it just to add context. For example, they tell you when the motor car was going to the school with the president in Florida, what was going on? Because everything I watched before, I couldn't understand if the first airplane hit World Trade Center while the president was in the classroom or before. And actually, I learned that from the voiceover. So I think that was a very, very good use of voiceover. It was, maybe they use voiceover less than five times.
Yeah, I was going to say it's very little. And I think that's a good thing. Yeah.
And each time they use it for a very, very good reason. So that was very good. And the voice also, because most of the time when we think of documentary voiceover, there is like a voice that is so dramatic, right? That wasn't dramatic. The voice was like the voice of any of the people they interview. So you could barely realize, oh, this is a voiceover. So that was very good.
Yeah, and the narrator is Jeff Daniels, the actor. So yeah, he does a good job, and you're right. It's just sparingly used, and to fill in some of those gaps, that I think it works really well. Yeah, the only other thing I wanted to say is just that so we get a lot of archival footage, and you know, I've seen the footage over and over, but it's still so shocking and so horrifying to watch, especially the shots that are on the street in New York as the second plane's hitting, as the buildings are falling. And like, I think I've seen those sometimes without audio, but hearing the reactions of the people on the street is really chilling. And that's probably the points in the film that are the hardest to watch and the most kind of emotionally wrenching. But yeah, it's almost hard to wrap your mind around exactly, you know, what all happened that day, because it's such an awful thing. But it's so fascinating, and the effects that it had and everything. So yes, that is 9/11 Inside the President's War Room. That is streaming on Apple TV Plus just for the day 9/11. That is going to stream for free. So if you don't have Apple TV, you can watch that on the actual 9/11 for free. So otherwise, you can watch it with a subscription. But all right, well, thank you so much, Obed. It's so fascinating to hear your perspective on this, and just getting your perspective on different things through your films as well is really wonderful. So I thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. So this is the second time I've been to your podcast. I can almost say that I am part of the family. So
yeah, of course. Yes. We say friend of the show. I think.
Let me share that with you. There is a saying in French. I'm going to say it in French. Maybe
oh, I'll great. Try to,
which goes, jamais deux sans trois. Never two without three.
Ah, all right. So we have to do it again, is what you're saying.
So yes, thank you for having me. It was a very interesting conversation. I got to learn, you know, from you. And thank you also for the opportunity to talk about my film. You know, you don't get a chance to talk about your own work. So thank you for having me. And also thank you for the recommendation to watch 9/11 inside the President's War Room. So yes, as I said, I will continue to watch more, and I will catch up with you on social media. And so yes, I wish a very long life to all of you.
Thank you so much. And yes, we have to do it at least one more time, I think. Not just once, but yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Obed. And we will talk to you next time.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. big thanks to Obed for returning for that wonderful discussion, and best of luck to him with his new film. Stay tuned next time. We'll get back to our regularly scheduled podcasts in which we are marathoning through the films of Wong Kar-wai, which has been an incredibly rewarding experience so far. We also review a recent film in each episode, so you're bound to find something that you like. And with that, thank you for listening to Arthouse Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes now, and you can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, or you can buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. That's at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob-free.